Thank you for tuning in and listening to Kumasan, a fantasy fiction story podcast. This style of podcast harkens back to old-fashioned radio dramas, blended with the rich storytelling of an audiobook. Kumasan is an ongoing weekly series, so it's recommended that you begin listening with episode 1 and continue from there. Kumasan depicts fictional violence and features mature language. Listener and parental discretion is advised. Last week on Kumasan, after 50 years away from his childhood home, the Citadel, Magog returned to find old friends and old memories awaiting him. Finally, gaining access to the Tower of the Clouds, his father's mysterious and guarded space, Magog found his father and is finally beginning to piece together the eons-old prophecies of the ancient mystics, the Council of Elders. This week, we continue with part 2 of The Citadel. A caravan of 200 men and women filed slowly out of the forest and arduously up the towering green grassy hill toward the ruins of the ancient temple, the Great Hall. All clad in identical purple hooded cloaks, these pilgrims and their leader, Galdox Gabriel, had spent months searching the deep, dense, dark forests of central Quindror for the secretively hidden, unmapped sacred location. Once found, Galdox and his faithful followers wasted no time in making their way here, with the intention of making it a permanent settlement. Galdox, a gifted wizard, mystic, and seer since his childhood, never knew who his mother or father were. Being abandoned in these same dark woods of central Quindror, eventually being discovered and raised by the shaman Gweldowin until his teenage years. Gweldowin had made the claim to Galdox that he was the last living descendant of the Council of Elders, a small group of magic users, clerics, and seers among the Ancient Ones, the original First People who inhabited the Great Hall. On the day of Galdox's 16th birthday, he set out upon a long quest to find whatever information he could regarding this Council of Elders. Starting in Quindror, he accumulated long-lost tomes and grimoires that collected and retold the wisdom of those ancients. But he didn't stop there. Spending his young adulthood trekking the planet, he did not stop until he found what he was truly searching for. Absolute proof that what Gweldowin had told him was true. He found it there in a temple high in the mountains of Mishnu Venta, one of the four ancient empires of Perindamor, an empire almost nearly as ancient as the Great Hall itself. The scroll known as the Shajaratu Sara, or Family Tree, was waiting there, protected by three Mishnu Venta priests. The priests had guarded the scroll since before the great splitting of the landmass, Koral, and had passed it down through their generations, keeping it safely and secretly under their protection. The scroll was encased within a Perindamorian steel box, locked with a strange puzzle. The priests claimed that only a true, valid descendant of the Council of Elders could solve. Galdox sat on the floor under the protective watch of the priests for 3 days attempting to solve it, never sleeping, never eating. Frustrated and perplexed, he tossed the box toward them, gathered his belongings, and turned to leave the temple.
Do you give up on all your endeavors so easily, young man?
I cannot solve it. By the gods, I cannot. I wasted 10 years of my life doing nothing more than chasing an asinine assertion that was put to me by what I fear now was nothing more than a lunatic. I have tried, and I have miserably failed. If I am truly what I thought I was, it would not be this hard for me to discover it.
I posit quite the opposite to you, Galdox. If you truly are what you believe yourself to be, why should it be so easy for you to discover it?
My brother, speak truth, Galdox. I would champion you to remain. Does anything of great value ever come without first a great trial? I would also say you rely far too heavily on your magical gifts. While they are great, that is for sure, magic has a time and a place. Just as the value of doing the everyday tasks of man with one's own hands has its own merit.
Galdox relented, and with a fresh, inspired vigor, returned to the task of solving the puzzle of the box. Taking into account what the priests had told him, he began to manipulate the lock with his bare hands, using no magic, studying the dials upon the lock as he rotated each one progressively in turn, taking stock of the patterns that began to form beneath his own fingers. Within mere moments, to his great surprise, he realized the dials were beginning to form the word family in the mother tongue of ancient Karelian. Once the final character clicked into place, all 9 of the dials illuminated brightly, and the lid of the box let out a soft hiss and opened up. Galdox wheeled around to face the priests behind him with an expression like a child who just received a new toy. They all shot him a congratulatory smile and nod. Beaming with joy, Galdox slowly pulled the scroll from the box and excitedly unrolled it. The document held countless names, none of which Galdox recognized, but scanning to the end of the list, he saw his own name was the 2nd from the end. With an audible gasp, he also noticed a name below his own: Magog Gabriel. Looking now to the name above his own, he was perplexed to discover that he could not read it. It was blurred from his vision, and no matter how hard he tried or what angle of viewing he employed, the name remained hidden to him.
The name you now seek is not intended for you to know, Galdox. Take comfort in your discovery and let that part of yourself go.
I don't understand why. I would like to know the name. Why is it hidden from me?
The scroll has chosen to hide this person from you, and there is nothing either you or we can do to change that. Brother Makahin is right. Let it go.
You have earned what you came here seeking. I believe you have people waiting for you outside this temple. They have been patient. I think it's best that you go to them and allow them to share in your joy.
To Galdox's surprise, the scroll flew from his hands and back into its protective casing, which snapped closed once again, the dials on the locking assembly turning quickly to seal the ancient document away for perhaps the next generation to discover. Understanding that his time here with the priests was concluded, Galdox left the temple and joined the fairly large cluster of people that had waited the entire 3 days for him outside the temple. During his lengthy quest across Karelia, it would seem that he had amassed an extensive following of devotees along the way. They were just as equally obsessed with his personal mission as he was, it would seem. They left their personal lives behind and vowed to follow him faithfully, no matter where he went. And now, in the present moment, after months of searching, they were all filing their way up the hill towards the ruins of the Great Hall. As each reached the sacred spot, they began removing their sandals and placing their bare feet upon the green tiles. They walked upon those ancient tiles for quite some time, smiling and laughing, dancing and singing, making love to one another, as the waning twin suns shone summer warmth down upon their faces, and the energy surging throughout that ancient ruin tingled their feet and bare naked bodies. Galdox had taken one of his female followers, Vera, aside, allowing the heat of the moment to overtake them both. They gave to each other passionately and completely. A relationship had been blossoming between them for months and was now consummated.
At this moment, I would like to take you as my wife, if you will have me.
Yes, Galdox. I accept wholeheartedly. I sense your love for me, and I feel the same.
Galdox reached down and placed his hand upon her stomach, emitting a soft yellow glow.
And 9 months hence, we will have a son. This has been seen.
Once night fell and the four moons of Karelia hoisted themselves again into the black sky, braziers were lit and the followers of Galdox Gabrielle began to gather around a large circle that was embossed into the flooring stones of the ruins. Around the entire circumference of the circle were hundreds of ancient mystic symbols, which Galdox knew related to the myriad constellations hanging upon the cosmos above them.
Everything is ready for you, Master Galdox. We simply await you to begin.
Let us begin, my loved ones!
Galdox passed through the ring formed by his people and made his way into the mystic stone circle that lay between them. He laid himself, still fully naked, down upon the tiles, facing upward toward the blackness of the Karelian sky above. His followers joined hands and began to sing softly as Magog closed his eyes and lifted his hands skyward, palms forward. The singing grew slowly as the fires within the many braziers grew in intensity and height. Slowly, Galdox's body left the tiles as he rose into the air, higher and higher, leaving the terrestrial boundaries of Karelia altogether. He floated weightlessly in the blackness of space. Stars flickered around him like millions of candle flames. The four moons and two suns were all easily visible at once. He marveled at the grandiose scale of it all. The blanket of space stretched farther than his eyes could see, like the great ocean half. He then set out across the vastness of the universe to another planet. The planet heaved and exploded, slinging millions of fragments in all directions out across the immensity of space. Then he returned, still thousands of miles above Karelia, observing a thick, hazy mist that surrounded her. He was sure that this was some sort of protective magic placed around his world by the goddess Kural herself. He looked in the opposite direction of Corellia and saw it. Quarta, the hammer of heaven. It was moving through the black void at an unfathomable speed. It took only mere seconds for the gigantic rock, seemingly made of pure blue fire, to reach him and then race by him, locking in its final destination. The blazing comet smashed headlong into Corellia's misty outer armor, breaking itself apart so that 9 smaller but still gigantic fragments went raining down, scattering around the entirety of the planet. He was in many places at once now, spanning the breadth of Corellia, observing many people discovering the fragments of Quartanium. He watched as the giant fragments easily possessed the Corellians that found them, men and women alike, their eyes becoming devoid of all humanity, replaced by a burning blue light, their souls blackened and their bodies twisted and deformed like demons spawned from the very maw of hell. Following closely behind were legions of followers, also with glowing blue eyes. Galdox saw rivers of blood and mountains of fire as armies amassed and began laying waste to everyone and everything good. These armies of evil swept the lands, killing and destroying like a black cancer, forever changing and shaping the destiny of his beloved world. But then Galdox also saw hope. He saw a man from another world, the same world that had just exploded and thus spawned Quarta. He appeared as half man and half bear, awakened from a long sleep and given birth to by the hallowed ground of Corellia herself. Being from the same origin as Quarta, the man would be impervious to its evil magic. As a matter of fact, he would draw unbelievable strength from it. This man would do everything in his power to return balance back to Corellia. He also saw a young Corellian man and Corellian woman come to the Bear Man's aid, ready and willing to assist him in this hour of great need. Both being blessed by the gods with blind sight, they too would remain unaffected by the evil held in the glowing blue Quartanium or the glowing blue eyes of their owners. Lastly, he saw his own as yet unborn son, Magog, the final member of this unlikely band of heroes, and began to weep. The groundsman Al-Jarel was out in the forest that surrounded the citadel, patrolling them as he always did. Atop his horse, he was making his way along the banks of the river that snaked its way from the north of Quindror and emptied into a great lake in the south. He could not immediately see what it was at first, but something under the surface was emitting a glowing blue light ahead. He had been feeling a compulsion toward this spot all morning, and had finally discovered the source of this compulsion. As he neared the blue glow in the river, Magog quickly dropped from the sky above and landed upon the riverbank, now blocking Al-Jarel's view of it. Magog lifted his hands, palms outward, towards Al-Jarel and moved them outward in a deliberate sweeping motion.
Santos. Not you, Al-Jarel. Not under my watch.
All Jarell lost sight of, and thusly his interest in, the blue glow, and turned his attention towards Magog.
Magog, good to see you again so soon. What brings you outside the Citadel?
Oh, I have some gathering to do along this river. A potion master's work is never done, it would seem. Have you spotted any parliam mushroom along this river today? I am in great need of many of them.
Afraid not. But I will collect any I find, and ensure they find their way to you with haste.
Splendid, old friend. Well, good day to you. I must endeavor to complete my list of ingredients before the afternoon begins. Do not let me waylay you any longer, Al-Jarell. I'm sure you must continue your daily tasks as well.
Aye. Fare thee well, Magog. Best of luck with your hunting.
Yeah.
Magog watched as Al-Jarell rode off into the forest, scratching his head and seeming a bit confused. Magog turned and leaned forward as he observed the massive black stone in the river as it gave off its nearly blinding blue glow. He gently rubbed the skin around his dead, milky right eye and sighed. This would not be the first time in his adult life when he would ponder whether his family would have still been together had it not been for this cursed eye. He knew the true answer to that question, but couldn't resist its asking, just the same. But in this moment, as he stared straight into the heart of the glowing blue quartanium and simply smiled, he reconciled the consequences had been well worth the circumstances. The evil contained within this vessel had absolutely no power over him.
Ha! Ha 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 ha! It worked, Papa! It worked!
Magog floated up into the air above the rock, swinging his hands out to his sides, then clapping them harshly together. A thunder cracked the air loudly around him as the ground around the stone opened up wide and swallowed it whole.
At the very least, I can send one of you down into the gaping maw of hell where you belong. We'll take care of the rest of you in due time.
Vera Gabrielle exited her nondescript home building and walked into the narrow alleyways of the Citadel and headed north in the direction of the Tower of the Clouds. Her husband Galdox had ceased to keep residence in their home building for several months now, and in truth, she probably hadn't seen Galdox at all in a few weeks. And now her son Magog hadn't returned home since the previous day. She walked as quickly as one could through these switchback alleys. One was never able to walk in a straight line directly from their starting point to their destination within the Citadel, as one would always encounter harsh angles and abrupt changes in direction. It was beyond maddening to her. She never pretended to understand what Galdox was trying to do with his crazy maze city, and as they drifted more apart over the years, and especially the most recent months, she did not really care. She just wanted to find her son and hug him. In this cursed city, she felt exiled, lonely, and forgotten. As the wife of Galdox and the mother of Magog, she did not join the other followers in becoming Bela Elise, and thus was quickly alone. Although Galdox talked ad nauseam about making the Citadel a protected sanctuary for many, no one was actually ever allowed in or out. There were no other people here besides Galdox and herself and Magog and Bela Elise. And Bela Elise was literally no one to her. Hundreds of people pretending to be only one person, she thought. She never saw any of them. They existed to serve her husband and apparently play with her son, but had absolutely nothing to do with her. She was simply shunned. Magog was the only thing in her life that brought joy and meaning. Not seeing her husband for periods of time was something she'd unfortunately grown rather accustomed to. But she'd be damned if he was going to systematically strip her son from her life as well. She walked the alleyways softly but quickly. Her beautiful bare feet seemed as though they barely touched the immaculately clean tiles. Outwardly, she looked like any other mother and wife, excitedly carrying a basket of lunch food to her beloved son and husband, wherever they might be. But that was a ruse. A guise. Inwardly, she was a lonely, scared, and desperate woman who was on the verge of breaking down. Inside, she was a raging torrent of desperation, and she couldn't get to Magog fast enough. She could feel the watchful eyes of Minnie Bela Elise always, always upon her, and she was always vigilant regarding her outward appearance. No more so than now. Did they know she was practically running to find her son because she felt like she was going mad? Did they know she planned to grab her son and leave this place with him this very day? Could they see her motives beneath her skin? Could they read her mind? Knowing that Galdox forbade Magog from ever entering the Tower of the Clouds, she made her way to a building she'd learned about recently where she was certain they'd be together. It looked, of course, precisely like every other building in the Citadel, but one did not go looking for address numbers and street signs in the Citadel. One memorized things, or one was inexorably lost. Finally reaching the front door, she simply let the lunch basket fall to the ground, and she did not bother to knock. She turned the knob and walked right in. She had a great deal of time on her hands and would often follow her husband and her son around, observing their daily movements. She had discovered Galdox frequenting this building in recent weeks. It appeared to be a place Galdox had been doing a lot of his work lately, in addition to the tower. She was simply playing a hunch that Magog would be here as well. Once inside, she marveled only for a fleeting second at how the vestibule was exactly identical to every other vestibule in the Citadel, right down to every meticulous detail. It wasn't just the architecture or the craftsmanship. It was also the precision in which everything in the room was placed. The flower vase on the front entry table was always precisely 4 inches in from the left edge of the table. Always. Things like that. Every vestibule, every building. Once one passed through the door at the back of the vestibule, however, every building revealed its true purpose and its difference to the rest. Vera had never been in this particular building before, so had no idea of what its layout or function was beyond that vestibule door. Quietly inching her way down a long but narrow corridor lit only by the occasional candle sconce on the wall, she began to hear a muffled voice further down the way. Maybe it was two voices. More? There was a strange smell she began to become aware of the farther down the hallway she went. It reminded her of a time in her childhood when she burned a small pile of trouncing feathers. The muffled voices weren't getting any clearer, but slightly louder. And she could tell now that there were definitely two. Although she couldn't understand the muffled words being spoken, she speculated that the owners of the voices were perhaps arguing or having some sort of difficulty. After rounding a left turn in the corridor, the voices seemed pretty clear. She was finally able to confirm that the voices belonged to her husband and her son. Her pace now quickened, finally seeing the first door since the one in the vestibule. It was at the end of the corridor. Halfway down, she was running to it. She stood silently listening outside the door for a moment, hesitant to open it right away and reveal her presence.
Why is Bela used to hold me down, Papa? I do not like being held down.
It's for your own protection, Magog, so you don't squirm around during the process. This procedure is a very delicate one and requires my full concentration and precision. Do you understand? Besides, we are almost done. I have only the other eye to do now.
I don't like this, Papa. Let's do the other eye some other time, please. Please! I don't like this.
We have to finish it now, Magog. You will thank me for this and understand it later. Now hold still and let me finish.
Please stop, Papa. It actually hurts.
Vera burst through the door and into the large room where she found her son lying flat on his back on a large wooden table. Two Bela Elis held him down, one at the shoulders and one at the ankles. Her husband stood over Magog, touching the exact center of his pupils with the tip of one finger, producing an almost blinding radiant light that overpowered the entire room and those in it. At the sound of her surprise entrance, Galdox twitched reflexively, then quickly recoiled in horror. Magog screamed aloud and shot up to a sitting position as the Bela Elise let go of him. Magog quickly covered up the recent eye with his hands and scanned everyone in the room in wild fear.
I cannot see, Papa. You've damaged my eye. I can only see out of one eye, Papa. Mama, I cannot see out of this eye. I'm blind.
You bastard! You fiendish villain! What in the name of Hoth have you done to my son? You demented fucking bastard!
Magog ran quickly to his mother, sobbing uncontrollably. She scooped him up into her arms, still hurling obscenities at her husband like a sailor fresh into port.
You don't understand, Vera. You don't understand! I do all this for him! Can you not see that? My son will be a hero to this world after we are dead and gone. All of this is for him, and for the greater good of all Corellia. Your meddling here today has blinded our son in one eye for life. He would have been perfect, impervious. You cannot fathom what you've done.
What I've done? Me? You blinded our son, Galdox, you! With your insane ideas and these foolish devoters following at your side to help you do it. You've ruined our lives, Galdox. The three of us used to be so happy. You were content with your work and you were glad to give all of yourself to us. Now, you scurry into hiding and concoct fantasies about our world coming to an end. You create these scenarios so that you can be the savior, I think.
Reflexively, Galdox slapped her across the face with the backside of his hand.
You fool! You absolute fool! You know nothing! You understand nothing!
The slap sent her to the floor. She remained there for a moment, her lip bleeding and her pride hurt worse. She stood up slowly, straightening her dress as she did so. Magog, wildly fearful, ran to her side and locked his arm around her waist.
We are leaving this place of insanity, Galdox. Now, today, I'm taking Magog with me and we are leaving. We will not return here again, and I truly wish you will not seek to find us. I do not wish to see you again in this lifetime, Galdox Gabriel. You are to stay away from Magog as well. Continue living your life, whatever that may be, here in this world or your own creation. Do as you wish to these meager-minded fools around you, but you will never again harm our son or poison his brilliant mind with your fiendish plot.
Promise me you will return here, son. Promise me! Return here when Quartar disappears from the sky. You will understand only then, my son. You will understand then!
It took Vera and Magog nearly the entire day just to navigate their way free of the Citadel. Abela Elise stood before them at the outer wall.
Don't you dare stop me! If you know what is good for you, you fucking lunatic!
Go in safety, young Master Magog. Remember everything your father has told you. One day you will find its meaning.
Bela Elise turned and opened a portal for them to pass through and leave. The pair walked out of Galdox's city and just continued walking. Al-Jarel eventually intercepted them and offered his escort to Luxus, a 4-day ride to the south. For the entirety of the journey, Magog continued to rub the area around his damaged eye and recall his father's tormented plea to return.
You've been listening to Kumasan, Episode 8, The Citadel, Part 2. Hey, please stay tuned to the end of the credits for an exciting preview of next week's episode. If you've listened up to this point and are becoming a fan of the series, please consider supporting the show for as little as $2 a month. There are several monetary levels to choose from, and rewards such as an awesome map, Planet Corellia, Lost Lore, bonus content episodes, and enhanced episodes featuring creator commentary by Kumasan creator, me, David Paul Seymour. Kumasan is created, written, and produced by David Paul Seymour. The merry band of players for this week's episode was Tucker Thomason as Galdox Gabriel, James Dorton as Priest Makaheen and Al-Jarel, David Paul Seymour as Priest Al-Nasir, Jason Robbins as Priest Ihads and Bela Elise, with Susie Bravo as Vera Gabrielle, and Wally Phelps as Magog Gabrielle. The narrator, David Paul Seymour. Original music written and performed by Tucker Thomason. Hey friends, be sure to follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Kumasan Podcast for the latest show info and cast photos. You can find our Patreon account at patreon.com/KumasanPodcast. We'll see you back here next week. Stay tuned for an exciting preview of what's to come.
Next week on Kuma-san. It is 6 years later, and the boat builder's son, Aiden Paulin, has made his way quickly up the ranks of the pirating crew of the Screaming Eagle, led by Captain Morgan Alma. The crew face a hellish encounter in the swamps of Blackwater before arriving in Farawak, the foreboding lair of the Dalmadu Queen, where they must retrieve a most mysterious cargo. Will it be worth their lives?